So I decided that I would not be prejudiced toward them. I would not mistreat them. I treat them the way they treat me. Because I always knew and was always in the church. I was raised in the church, a very good minister who taught us to love everyone. And I never did see them based on their color of skin. Other than if they treated me in a way that I know that they were white and they were prejudiced, I wouldn't associate with them. How important was it? It was everything. It really has been the foundation for me and my family. And I'm very blessed to have had a mother who made us go to church, even though she had to work on Sundays. But whenever she was off, she'd carry us. But when she worked, we had to go to church. And I brought my children up the same way. I carried them to church, and they are still in the church today. So it was very important, and it has been all that we have need to manage to make it to this point, with God on our side.
Do you remember the Montgomery bus boycott?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you heard about it?
I was excited about it. I thought it was the best thing could ever happen to start this civil rights matter in this country. It was time. I glory in Rosa Parks Punk. I was glad she got angry that day and wouldn't move.
Do you think they were going to be successful?
Oh, yes. I had no doubt. Especially after they got Dr. King to be the leader. There was something about that man had magic. Mm-hmm. There's been nobody yet who can corral a crowd like he can. Nobody can appeal to the masses like he. Mm-hmm. And I just knew in my heart that he was the man.
So what was, I don't know if you remember, what were people talking about when they heard that Montgomery was starting this bus program?
We were excited. We were all sending money to help them. We were excited, very proud to see them do it. We knew it was time. We just had a feeling it was a beginning.
Did you think about starting something here during that time?
No. No. My daughter's coming. We want to cut this off.
Another question I wanted to ask you is, in terms of the meals that your mom used to cook,
mm-hmm.
Your favorite meal that she used to
cook? You mean at home?
Yes, ma'am.
The chicken and dressing, mm-hmm. and the greens, the cakes, because she loved to cook, mm-hmm. and she cooked cakes and pies. That was about the basic thing that we had. Other things were just regular, like white meat and cabbage, stuff like that, and cornbread. We didn't have much. Occasionally we'd get the vegetable and the chicken and dressing, but it was rare. We have peas and cornbread and things like that. We had to have that.
In terms of managing the money, who did that?
My mother. She had to. I told you about my father. She had to.
I'm sure it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't that much, but how did she make it stretch?
By bringing a lot of food home from the other people, from where she worked. You was asking about to control the money?
Yeah.
Who controlled the money? My mother did.
Okay. Do you see like any significant changes that have happened compared now and back then before?
Yes, tremendous changes. Tremendous. It is just great. Mm-hmm. I'm proud to live here now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with all the things that have occurred, all the changes. Very impressed.
Can you tell me something?
Okay, the fact that we can sit anywhere we want to sit on the bus. We can go to any movies. We can shop anywhere. We can try on dresses now, where at times when we were, before the integration came, we could buy dresses, but we couldn't even try them on in the department store. We can go to a restaurant and sit down and eat now, any restaurant we want. We can go to a hotel, get a room and stay anywhere. We can travel anywhere we need to travel and use the bathrooms anywhere we go. And we can worship it in the church we want to, go to in the school we want to. Mm-hmm. It is just great.
So when you had your kids, what did you try to instill in them?
To get to be the best that they could get, to do the best. To do the best that they could, do the best they could. Be your best. Yeah, be your best. So they did well. Both went on to college, finished high school, went to college.
You said in terms of trying on dresses, I guess when your family did go downtown to buy
shop. Mm-hmm. If you see a dress you like it, you buy it. But you, some of those stores want to try them on.
What about, and the one of the things I found is that a lot of times, especially with black women, when you went into these stores, they call you by your first name.
Mm-hmm. And others were Mrs. White coming to, hey, Mrs. Jones. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was Lola. Mm-hmm. But Mrs. Jones, Mrs. Davis for the whites, yes.
Did you think anything of that? Or?
No, it didn't bother me at that time. But later it did. Of course, during the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, Civil Rights marches and demonstrations, when we had the boycotts, we closed those charge accounts downtown. Mm-hmm. We closed them, wrote letters, and sent them a charge cards back.
Send them back?
Yes, sure did. We wrote letters and sent them back. Told them until they know how to treat us the same as they do to others. Mm-hmm. And now we're Mrs. down there now. That's right.
Some of those places that you used to segregate, do you go down there?
Oh, honey, there's nothing to go to now. They're all closed. Birmingham downtown is dead. There's not a major department store in Birmingham downtown. Not one. They're all gone out to the shopping malls now.
What were the names of the movie theaters that you went to on
4th Avenue? Carver Theater and the Famous.
The Famous?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's now the Jazz Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. That was a famous theater. And there was another one called the Carver. And if you went to the Lyric, you could go upstairs. White folks went downstairs. You had to go upstairs, the Lyric Theater.
What was the Lyric Theater?
It was on 3rd Avenue and 18th Street. Mm-hmm. Blacks used the side, though, and go upstairs, and the white folks went into the front and sat downstairs. Mm-hmm. But the two on the 4th Avenue was Carver. There was Carver and the Famous and the Frolic. There was a Frolic Theater, too, there. It went out early.
Mm-hmm.
There were three.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much it cost?
No, I don't remember. We didn't go that much, no way, but I don't remember, but I'm sure it was very cheap. Because like I said, we were very poor. Didn't have much, even the boys you dated didn't have much money. Didn't have all those good Burger King jobs and things they can get now. Didn't have all of that. Mm-hmm. It was bad.
Well, you talked about some of the significant changes, but do you see anything else that needs to be changed in terms of race relations?
Yeah, I still see a lot of things that need to be changed. We need to see a lot more, and it's gradually getting there now, a lot more integration within the church denominations, blacks and whites, because we have a share of prejudice on our part, too. Blacks and white doing more in the land of working together in the churches and in the conventions and the congresses and things where they need to start integrating more and sharing pulpits where they need to get in involved in something like I was involved locally, something called Bridging the Gap, where we need to start doing things that we're not comfortable with. Like we need to start visiting white churches, and white church members need to start going to black churches and learning one another. You'll never get to learn them as long as we keep having these churches separated like that. And we learn one another, we get to interact better. And it's going to make a big difference in the world. That's right. We need to interact together. Stop doing everything that's comfortable for us. Stay in your black setting. Go in the white setting, somewhere you're not comfortable. And it's a challenge to do that. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, yeah, back then, I mean, I guess this wasn't going on.
No.
The integration of the church.
No. No, we hit on them a little bit during the days of the segregation. I mean, the direct action that we had in '63, we did hit on some of those churches, and we did go, and some did open their doors, and some of them are better, but it's still mass black churches, mass white congregations and conventions and things.
I wanted to ask you, do you remember the Brown decision back then?
Yes, 1954. Yes.
What did you think when you heard that?
I was proud of that. I was proud of that and really proud of it because so many things has been affected by that decision. So yes, I was very proud of Brian's decision. Thought it was timely. Mm. I just think everything that has happened for us, it was time. The time has come.
Once that decision came out, do you remember what happened here in terms of the schools in the 50s?
Nothing happened that time. We had to take them to court. No. Yeah, we had to file a lawsuit. The Alabama Christian Movement Human Rights did that. Had to take him to court to get integration done. James Armstrong, have you interviewed him?
No.
You haven't? Well, his sons were the ones who was a lawsuit. James Armstrong, you need to talk to him. Okay. That's why the lawsuit is in his name. So you need to talk with James Armstrong.
So,
His children went to Graymont, I think it was Graymont School, and tried to get in, they were refused, and then he came back and Reverend Shoresworth with the Alabama Christian Movement filed a lawsuit against the City Board of Education. But the lawsuit is in his name, Armstrong, versus the Board of Education.
How long did it take before the decision came back?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
We filed a lot of lawsuits during that time. We hit that one, for the Park and Recreation Board to integrate the parks. A lot of lawsuits going. Back to back. Those things move so fast. So we just couldn't keep on. We really did not know it was going to be that impact. Mm-hmm. And we really had no idea what it was going to do to this nation and this city. So to know exactly what went on during the filing of those cases, it's just hard to remember because so many things went down during that period. It was a period in our life here in Birmingham from about 56 to 64. It was just back-to-back situations, just one after the other.
Was it, do you remember, was it the 60s that you won all those cases that you filed lawsuits against?
Some were won before the 60s. Some were won before the 60s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some were won before the 60s. Because I can remember the one they had to file against the Terminal Station, Birmingham Terminal Station. The waiting rooms were segregated, and the Baldwins sat up there, and that lawsuit started that case. So it was just one situation after another, mm-hmm. test case, and they went to court.
Go ahead. Do you remember a place called Dynamite Hill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where Arthur Shores live. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. And the Congregational Church, the Catholic Church, first Queens University. Yeah. Sure.
Have these houses bombed like constantly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you what my pastor and a lady named Lucinda Roby and I did. And we could have been killed by some of the scrapnels. But when the bombs would go off, we'd call one another and say, well, did you know where it went off? We said, no. And we said, okay. My pastor said, I'm coming to pick you up. We're going to see. Because we want to see what damage and who was there. We could see what had happened and see what we could do. So we would go to every bombing. Yes, we showed up on the scene. We think about it now. We could have been killed. But my pastor, Lucinda Roba, who's now dead, and I used to go over there, those bombings, yeah.
Do you have an image of what you saw?
Yeah, we saw the dust and debris and stuff scattered everywhere, and the buildings damaged, yeah.
Do you remember which houses?
Shores was primarily the one because they were after him more than anybody else. Some other people got other damage around there, mm-hmm. Like the Davises, and I think, I can't remember the person lived right next house, on the next house from Shores. Several of those houses were damaged several times after that, but they were after him primarily because of his being involved in taking the lawsuits, mm-hmm. filing the lawsuits.
How is it possible for, I don't know if you know this, but for these people to plant these bombs without in their community?
Well, no policemen were there to protect anybody, and they was able to do it because I assume nobody was out. They planted them during a time when nobody was out and could see them. And so they could go there and pose as a repair person or somebody with a truck, so see, nobody would suspect them of doing anything like that. Mm-hmm. See, because they owned the jobs, they had all the jobs, so they could easily plant it in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
right at the base of the house, and pretend like they were reading the meter or something. Yes, they had all control of everything. And they did everything they could do nasty. Yes, it's true.
So is that why Birmingham got the name Bombingham?
Bombingham, yes, that's why. Mm-hmm. But that bombing there, and Reverend Shuttlesworth's house was bombed about 3 times, too.
Mm-hmm. What, did anybody find out why they bombed Davis's house? I mean, why? Because I can understand why they were at the Shores, but why?
Well, the Davis house was pretty close to Shores. It was in the same neighborhood as Shores. They lived in the same neighborhood, that's why. Because they were not involved in the movement at all. Because Angela wasn't involved. Angela was protected. Because I had a chance to see Angela at Brandeis. I went up to Brooklyn in 1952, I believe it was, with Reverend Howard Mellish. It was Southern Conference Education Fund during that time, and he took me on a tour of that eastern area up there. And Angela was at Brandeis, and I spoke at Brandeis College. And she sat in awe and just was shocked when I told her about all the things that occurred here. And she said, I was protected from that. She said, I did not know that was going to burn. So my mom and dad had shielded me from that. Mm-hmm. She said, I didn't know all that was going on. She was shocked when I told her about all the things that we'd been doing. Mm-hmm.
And this was like in 50?
Yeah, 50? Yeah, mm-hmm.
You spoke at Brandeis.
Mm-hmm.
We
were in the middle of boycotting and doing things here in Birmingham. And Reverend Shuttlesworth was involved with Southern Conference Education Fund. I was on the board at that time. And they wanted someone to come up in that area to talk to the northern people about what we were doing here. Mm-hmm. And during the time of that boycott was when I went up and spoke, they sent back things here for our kids for Christmas because we went shopping. And just loads of stuff was sent back for kids here to keep us from shopping. And that's what they wanted me to go on. I went on a tour with him. Went to Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut. Mm-hmm.
How was it?
Yeah, and it was great. It was a great experience. And I mean, just about every audience I had was pretty much predominantly white. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's where the money was, and they were rich, so he wanted me to hit those areas, so they would send some money down here for us. And they sent money, toys, clothing. Mm-hmm. Our kids didn't want for nothing. We had enough to supply the church that was involved in the movement. Mm-hmm. They were great.
What did you say to
them? I told them about the things that we were going through here, what was happening here, and the lawsuits we had filed, and how bad things were. And we planned to continue. We were not going to give up. And I spoke at houses, at churches, at schools. Mm-hmm. But Mellish, Reverend Howard Mellish set me up to do that. Mm-hmm. He planned the tour for me. And it was most beneficial to us.
So I guess the audience, you didn't know prior to the audience that you were going to
I didn't know who they were going to be, no. And we stayed in the white homes. We stayed in the homes there, yes. He had set up homes for us to stay in. They were just jewels. They were very sweet. Mm-hmm. Very nice white people. Mm-hmm. I loved Massachusetts the most. I was impressed with the state of Massachusetts, yes.
Where in Massachusetts did you go?
Mm-hmm. Several places. And I know I went to Kennedy's area in Brookline. Mm-hmm. Great, honey. It was pretty. Connecticut was a pretty state, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really had a good time. And enjoy telling the story. Yeah, see, I served as correspondent secretary for the Alabama Christian Movement Human Rights in 56 till I went to work in the federal government. And Reverend Mellish thought that I should be the one to come. And he chose me to come to go on that tour. But they sent a lot of money back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they sent a lot of money back to us, yeah.
So they were
sympathetic to the cause, yeah. Very supportive, mm-hmm. Yes, they were.
So did that change? I mean, I know you said you didn't have any resentment towards whites.
No.
But did you think that, I guess, going to these audiences that, you know, maybe there might be a chance that we can work together?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew it right away when I went to Reverend Mellish's house. His wife had never met me. I'd met him because we were both on the board together. Mm-hmm. And his children all were just jewels. Yeah, so it was really nice. It was a nice tour. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I met a lot of friends. Mm-hmm.
So was that an interracial group? That was an interracial group?
Mm-hmm. That was an interracial group, right. Mm-hmm.
Who were some of the people that, were they from Birmingham area?
No, they were from across the country. Mm-hmm. From New Orleans, Kentucky, because Ann and Carl Brayton were in Kentucky. as a husband and wife team in Reverend Mellish was in New York. Reverend Shoulder worked for then, at that time, I think was in, he was still in Alabama, I believe. I don't think he'd gone to Ohio then. And then Jim Dombrowski was in Louisiana, and Evelyn Falkowski was in Huntsville. So it was just a mixture of people across the country.
Oh, so you
were with the Brayton? Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, Ann and Carl Brayton, yeah. No, Ann real well, yes. And Carl is dead now. Right. Yeah, I know them. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anna Carl Brayton. Yes. She's a great soul. She's not too well now, I understand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to meet her. Mm-hmm. This past, I went to the Southern Regional Council.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got a chance to meet her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you got to Judy Hand here?
No. Judy
Hand. Judy Hand. She works with them on the Southern Poverty. Judy Hand. She works with them. Look her up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She's a pretty nice white female.
Do you see any, in terms of what you taught your children and what you experienced yourself, that you see needs to be taught today? The children today?
Yes, I sure do. Sure do. We need it very badly because of where the children are now. We need it very badly. We've lost moral teaching. There's not enough discipline and not enough involvement in the church. Because that's going to be the answer to this problem.
Mm-hmm.
They got to get that love taught to them. And where else but in the church and showing it in the family. In our era, from what I see now, there has been a breakdown in the teaching. During the time we came along, it was the church, the school, and the family together, and you don't have that. The line is broken down. So if that's not available now, then the kids are going to continue with this violence. Not enough love. Not enough love.
Mm. So would you say that was the most important thing from that time period? That you
yes,
had,
yes.
Even though
we were poor and whatever else, we had love. Yes, we had love. In spite of the condition we were living under, there was love. Yes.
Anything else you want to?
No, I think that's about all.
Thank
okay.
You.
Mm-hmm.